Of all the things that I worry about for my daughter, food was not one of those.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. This is part two of a mini-series we're calling May Contain Nuts. It's about how allergies can change your relationship with food and people. The woman you just heard is Lydia Dom. She lives in L.A. When her daughter Ellie was 7 months old, Lydia and her husband were introducing solid foods into Ellie's diet.
I remember we got a jar of puree and it was vegetables, and she was eating it really well. And I remember patting ourselves on her back saying like, oh, wow, she ate the whole jar. And we, after she ate, we took her into the bath and we're having fun. And I just remember calling my husband over asking, hey, you know, did you notice this bug bite on her cheek? And he's like, no, it wasn't there. It must have gotten her in the bath. And I'm like, okay, that's funny. I don't see anything. But it was summertime, so we thought maybe there's a bug that we're not catching. And then another red bump and another red bump. It was like all over her stomach. So at that point, we called the on-call nurse and trying to figure out what's going on. And we didn't realize, you know, what it was yet or how serious it was. So we're just waiting, kind of call hold. And we're like, oh, this is taking too long. So let's go in the car and maybe we can drive to the hospital. So we drive and we're stuck in traffic. And at that point, I'm like, I think this is getting worse. Her face was starting to swell. So I hung up on the on-call nurse and we're calling 911 at this point. And we're talking to them and like, okay, we think you need to stop and we'll come meet you. So we stopped on the way to the hospital and they came and picked us up. And at that point, her eyes are swollen shut. Her face is all red and poofy. Can't even see like the normal contours of her face.
From the time the first red bump appeared to the time Ellie was covered in hives was just 15 minutes.
I was sort of in shock. You know, we got to get to the hospital right now. What if she stops breathing? And there are points where she wasn't crying, like, oh, does that mean she's not breathing? And when she would cry, it'd be this huge relief, like, okay, she's still breathing. I was just praying, God, please help us to get to the hospital in time. It's just that fear that, oh, God, she could die right now. It's just the feeling of helplessness that I've never felt before and fear that I've never felt before.
And so the ambulance comes and takes you and Ellie in the ambulance to the hospital. Your husband, I assume, stays with the car and follows behind.
Right.
And you get to the hospital. What happens next?
So we're waiting in the ER, waiting to be seen. And she's laying on me and she promptly vomits all of her dinner. And we just waited to see the doctor after that. And when they came, they gave her medicines and kept us under observation. You know, we end up staying there overnight because she has a secondary reaction, and we later found out that what she had was anaphylaxis.
Anaphylaxis is a severe allergic reaction. It can be life-threatening. Fortunately, they got Ellie to the hospital in time.
There's the relief that morning that she's still alive, and you know, the doctors are saying you can go home now. And then there's also the fear that was not addressed of what does this mean? Is this going to happen again? Like, what can I feed her?
And what were those first few weeks like back at home before you got a more clear diagnosis?
It just felt like we were walking in a minefield. Our parents had never gone through this. Not many of our friends knew anything about this. So we were just really on our own, trying to figure out how can we keep her safe. At the same time, food is everywhere. So it was just this this feeling of helplessness.
That was about a year and a half ago. Now Ellie's two. She's allergic to wheat, oats, eggs, and banana so far. Since that first ER visit, there have been two more. Not quite as serious as the first, but still plenty scary. Now, Lydia and her husband have a better understanding of Ellie's allergies and how to handle them. They know what symptoms to look for, and they have an EpiPen, just in case. But still, it's always on their minds.
Every time that we feed her, am I giving her something that she's trusting that is safe and it's coming from mommy or it's coming from daddy is going to hurt her? And of course, she's not thinking that, but we're thinking that. Am I making the right choice? Am I giving her the right thing? And, you know, the guilt. That guilt and fear are always there.
Even when Lydia goes out to eat by herself, she has to worry about it. If she gets a stain on her shirt and then goes home and gives Ellie a hug and Ellie touches the stain, that could trigger a reaction. That's why Lydia avoids noodles at restaurants. They tend to splatter. So having a daughter with food allergies has changed Lydia's own relationship with food.
There is this thing that me and my friends would talk about, like, are you a person who lives to eat or eats to live? And I was in the lives to eat category. Like, it changes your routines at home. You know, the comfort foods you can go to, we can't have that at home. Sometimes we just don't want to eat the plain foods that she eats because there's so few foods that she can eat. So we just have to sneak out and get it. It'll be harder when she realizes what we're doing, but right now we can get by.
So you guys literally go out, take turns going out solo to get the foods that you want, and then you like eat
them
under cover of night, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. So she'll have her dinner, and one of us will sometimes go out, maybe like two or three times a week, and say, Mommy's going to go now. Mommy will be back soon. And we come back.
What are some of the foods that you and your husband grew up eating that you miss having at home, or miss not being able to share with your daughter?
Yeah. So it's funny because I had this whole conversation with my mom before we started solids. Because I didn't realize she had this whole plan for introducing us to like Korean foods and flavors at a young age, because she didn't want us to grow up in America not liking Korean food. So we had this, you know, sort of in mind that we were going to do, like introducing kimchi, and, you know, in the same way that there's videos on YouTube of kids eating their first flavor of lemon and it's really sour and they make that funny face. Like, she was really looking forward to videotaping Ellie when she had her first kimchi, and it was, you know, and then to not be able to feed her, like, comfort foods. Just imagine, like, the soups that my mom would make and the soup bases, which are really complex and have a lot of flavors in them. I think there was definitely, like, a period of mourning for that.
And I would think, I mean, big family gatherings and holidays and things, like, food is always such a big part of those events. Mm-hmm. How do you guys deal with that?
She's getting to the point where she does realize what's going on. And I remember it was really hard Christmas Eve because we had back-to-back family gatherings, and at both times she couldn't sit, you know, at the table with everyone else. She's too young to trust that she's not going to grab something, you know, that something's not going to splash on her. And she was crying, asking to sit at the table, to have to always be aware that she is staying away from the food that is being served. Adds a little bit more stress. Every time we're basically outside home where we know that, you know, generally everything is safe for her, we always have to be on and on alert. We're always like telling each other, like, oh, hey, the cookies came out over there. Make sure she doesn't get those cookies.
I feel like when you scan, I have this image now of you scanning a playground full of children, and it's like Terminator vision, where you have like all you know, your little squares and circles that are like investigating different things, and like food identified, like peanut butter, it's peanut butter, you know, keep her away from that. Like, it must be on your mind constantly.
Yeah. So I mean, we're trying not to be overly stressed or paranoid, or to like, you know, pass on that stress to her at all.
What are your hopes and fears for her around this issue going forward?
I just hope that, you know, when she grows up, and if she still has the food allergies and she doesn't outgrow it, that she will, you know, not feel fearful. Yeah, I don't want it to restrict her from, you know, living basically a normal life. But that's going to take a lot of training on our part, and educating her and helping her to know that this is something that she can manage.
Down the road, Ellie may outgrow some or all of her allergies, but she may not. She might have to manage them for life. Colleen Thomas knows what that's like. She can sit at the grown-ups table now, but she still feels left out.
Food is such a shared communal experience. Everybody is enjoying the thing, and it's just taken for granted that this is the way we're coming together in community. And for me, it makes me feel like a bit of an outsider.
Coming up, more with Colleen. Plus, one woman tells us about a time she ate the thing she's allergic to on purpose, and it was totally worth it. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. This is part two of a mini-series on food allergies we're calling May Contain Nuts. Part one went up last week. It's a collaboration with our friends at Radiolab, all about something that happened to my friend, Amy Pearl.
I ran into the bathroom and I was like looking in the mirror and lo and behold, I had hives all over my stomach and then they started coming out of my hands and I was like, oh my God, something's happening. And at one point I did get up and unlock my door because I did feel like I'm going to pass out, call an ambulance, and then they're not going to be able to get in. So, I mean, I was a little bit afraid of what was happening.
This is such a good story. And although you can't tell it from that clip, it's probably the funniest story you'll ever hear about a person almost dying. That's part one of May Contain Nuts. It's up now wherever you got this one. Check it out. Now, back to today's show. So far in this series, we feature people whose food allergies are life-threatening. But even if yours isn't that serious, it can still have a huge impact on your life. Sam Sedevi lives in Richmond, and she grew up in a big food family. Her mom's a great cook, her dad was a line cook, and she learned to cook at a young age. She was basically raised in the kitchen. Her food allergies first became an issue when she was in her early 20s.
I went on a trip to Baltimore with my boyfriend at the time. I do not remember where we went to eat or what I ate, but I just remember I kept getting up in the middle of the night because it felt like I was getting stabbed in the intestines, and there's nothing you can really do about it. So I couldn't sleep, and it was miserable. And I think that was what really, when it started regularly waking me up in the middle of the night, I had to come to the realization that in order to feel better, I was going to have to cut a lot of things out of my diet. And I knew it would be hard, and I knew it would be kind of depressing.
Sam went to an allergist. They rubbed her back with extracts from different foods to see what got a reaction.
My back is exposed. This nurse is staring at it, and she would just be staring and staring, and things would start popping up, little hives, I guess, and she'd yell something like, tomatoes! And I'd be like, oh no, that's depressing. And then she would continue and be like, lettuce! And I was like, oh, that's not that bad. But there were some that were just, like, she yelled out hops, and I love craft beer and grew up brewing beer with my dad. And when she yelled that one out, I was not happy. I love craft beer and I love trying different beers. And I just remember feeling so depressed that I wasn't going to really be able to drink beer anymore.
So what do you drink now?
Cider and wine.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, there are kind of situations in life where you want a beer. And sometimes I'll be bad and I'll have one and I will have to take the consequences of that.
Tell me a situation when you feel like nothing but a beer will do.
Football. I'm a big Green Bay Packers fan, so sometimes all you want is a big beer and a bratwurst. And the bratwurst I can get away with, but the beer sometimes I can't. But sometimes I'll do it anyways. There's a bar across the street from the stadium that we always go to, and it's called Kroll's. And you can get Bloody Marys, which, since they're made of tomato, it's a big no for me because tomatoes really bother me. But I'll do it anyways. I'll get my Bloody Mary, and I'll get my beer brat. And then I usually stand in the stadium, and my stomach hurts, and I have to keep it together because I have to cheer for my team.
And so do you have people in your life who try to talk you out of doing that?
My mother is definitely one to do that. She's very responsible and very caring. My dad is like, yeah, this is great. Do it. It's fine. You'll be fine. This will be fun. We always get Bloody Marys. This is great. And my mom is usually like, Samantha, this might not be quite a great decision for you right now. And I'm like, I don't care.
On those nights when you go out and have a few drinks and decide you're going to have a slice of pizza or something that you're allergic to because you just can't resist, how many minutes do you get where you're like, yes, I'm winning. This was a great decision. Versus how many minutes of agony?
Usually about half an hour. I'd say half an hour, 45 minutes. If it's in my stomach, it's okay. It's when it hits my intestines is when the pain begins. So I'll be out, I'll make that choice, and then I do it, and it's awesome. And I remember how much I miss eating this food that I haven't had in forever. And then regret starts to set in, and I usually have to go home because I'm no longer fun. And then I have to deal with the consequences.
And the next morning when you're dealing with the consequences, do you wish you hadn't done it the night before? Or do you feel like that 30 or 45 minutes was worth it?
I guess it depends on how good the food was. I have this vivid memory of going out and they had a pork ragu, like red sauce, over gnocchi. And I remember looking at the menu and I was like, I want this. I love gnocchi. And it sounded so good. And I did it and I ate it and it was so good. And I right now remember how good it was. And then maybe we left, I got home, and in all honesty, I threw it up. It was disgusting. But it was so good. I still remember how good it was. It was worth it. That was an instance where it was definitely worth it.
Let's just, this is the place we got to begin, Colleen. What are you allergic to?
That's the way everybody puts it. What are you allergic to? Like, I'm going to tell you three things.
This is Colleen Thomas. She lives in Crockett, California, in the Bay Area.
The answer is I can eat fewer things than I can't eat. So the question I try to reframe people to say is, well, what can you eat?
When Colleen was a kid, she had a lot of behavioral issues. She acted out. She sometimes got angry. Then, when she was 10, she was diagnosed with a dairy allergy. Colleen and her parents figured out that if she avoided dairy, her behavior was a lot better. But for a 10-year-old, that's not so easy.
One of the hardest things was that I would be invited to birthday parties. This is like 1980. And everybody had pizza and ice cream cake. So sometimes I would just eat pizza and ice cream cake at these parties, just live it up. And then I would get home and walk in, and my mom would immediately know, because I was like, you know, I don't know, throwing my stuff around or something was going on. And she'd be like, did you have milk? And that would make me really mad because I couldn't, you know, hide from her. And she'd be like, go to your room till you feel better.
And how did it feel as a 10-year-old to be given this reason, this explanation for why you were having these behavioral issues?
Well, I think the biggest thing I felt at the time was that there was something wrong with me. Like, I sort of mixed the message up, I think, in my mind, and I got the story that, you know, I was somehow wrong and they had somehow found a way to fix me. They took me off the dairy and my behavior improved and they were like, oh, you're such a better kid now. It felt like, oh, they didn't like me the way I was and that's me authentically and they don't really like me and they just want this improved version of me, you know, that kind of thing.
Since then, Colleen's discovered she has a lot more allergies. Wheat, gluten, corn, and soy, which eliminates most bread and almost every condiment. She also can't have most peppers, oils, and alcohols. Also grapes, strawberries, the list goes on. The foods she can eat are things like steamed meat and veggies, beans, eggs, avocado, rice, and apples. If she's exposed to just a little bit of a food she shouldn't eat, she'll get a headache. If she has a lot of it, the headache can be bad enough to put her out of commission the whole next day.
Oh, we got some Chinese food recently. and I always order it, you know, just the plain steamed chicken and steamed rice. And then I got it, and the meat, the chicken, tasted really good. And I was like, okay, this is not plain chicken. But I was so hungry for protein and for flavor, and I just really had, and so I just kept eating it. And yeah, it was not a good idea.
And so how long did the reaction last?
That time, I think it was basically the next day. We had it like dinner time, and the next day I was like, yeah. And the funny thing was that the night I ate it, I was getting the headache, and you know, but I was still kind of like excited and happy about the food, even though I was having the headache. And then the next day, I saw the leftovers in the fridge, and then I saw them, and I got mad. I was like, I don't like that food. That food is bad. So the next day, like the happy part of it had worn off, and I was just angry, and I was mad at myself for eating it.
Colleen asked her husband, Rodrigo, to step in.
I told Rodrigo, I said, you need to eat that because I still kind of want it, but I'm really mad at it. You need to eat it so I don't have to think about it.
But so it must be hard to have that kind of conflicted relationship with food, because you talk about the high that you had while you were eating the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And then to resent the chicken the next day as if you've been betrayed by this food that made you feel so good. That must be difficult.
Yeah, it is complicated. And, you know, being in society is more complicated. And food is such a shared communal experience. Everybody is enjoying the thing. And it's just taken for granted that this is the way we're coming together in community. And for me, it makes me feel like a bit of an outsider.
And so there's a certain expectation that a person with an allergy is going to feed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if at times that gets wearing or it becomes hurtful that people aren't more eager to volunteer to make something that you can eat instead of having you bring your own food.
Mm. Well, I think I sort of maybe am self-isolating in it a little bit because I sort of don't want to go through the whole song and dance with everybody about what I can and can't eat. And it's just easier for me to bring whatever I can eat because I know I'm not going to be able to eat anything they have. But then I try to be social and, you know, not let me eating out of my own little lunchbox while everybody's got their plate full of everybody's food be weird. But actually, I have a lot of people in my life who really do want to get involved. We have a small group of friends who come over to our house quite often for dinner parties, and it's like a potluck thing. And they decided that they only want to make the foods that I can eat, which was pretty amazing and blew me out of the water. And I have people in my life who don't understand and don't want to dive into the nuance, but they just want to be helpful. Like, they just want to buy me something. I have a coworker who always gets me a Starbucks card, and I can't eat or drink anything at Starbucks except water. but he tries. Every year he gets me a Starbucks card and he goes, "You can get something there, right? Right? Right?" And he so wants me to say yes that I always say yes because I just can't break his heart because he's so excited to he found something for me and he's really excited, you know, and I'm like, yeah, it's thanks. Awesome. You know, don't know what to say.
You come home with 6 bottles of Ethos water.
Ethos water.
Your husband's like, "Oh, I guess you got another gift card to Starbucks." Huh?
Actually, he can drink coffee, so I just give him the gift card.
Okay.
He has a little stack.
For Colleen's husband, Rodrigo, a stack of Starbucks gift cards is one of the perks of being married to someone with food allergies. But in other ways, it can be hard.
I want to go to a lot of different restaurants and enjoy them, and I want to enjoy new types of foods. And so I think I feel sad to feel like that's not something I can do and share with her. And so it's kind of a bummer to be like, there's all this amazing, wonderful world out there, and no, you can't be part of it.
Colleen, I hear you chuckling. Like, how do you feel when you hear Rodrigo say this?
I feel a little guilty. but at the same time, I have to say, when we do go to the one Japanese restaurant we always go to, I'm a little jealous because he can order anything off the menu and I can only have the one thing. But I can have the one thing, so try not to, like, complain.
Once in a while, Colleen and Rodrigo do end up at a new restaurant. And when they do, Rodrigo's often the one who's more persistent about asking questions to make sure the food will be okay for Colleen. She still feels reluctant sometimes. I asked her why she thinks that is.
In my experience, it's like a thing that girls get taught. Not making waves, not asking for anything special. Don't take up space, be quiet, be accommodating, you know, all that kind of stuff. So for me, it was those sorts of ideas in my head. But I think I like to minimize it just because it feels a little bit embarrassing and it feels like, ugh, I do this every day, you know, I'm tired of it. You know, I just want it to be simple and easy, and it's not going to be. So we're just going to minimize it and make it as small as possible and get through it and get on to things that are more fun. I think that's kind of what I feel these days.
When you're in a restaurant or shared food situation where, you know, even if you've asked a lot of questions, you think that what you're about to eat is going to be okay, but you're not 100% sure, what's that first bite like?
You know, if I'm just getting steamed meat and veggies at a restaurant, I know what that's going to taste like because I make that for myself and I know it's very plain. And if I taste it and it's plain, then I'm not worried. But if I taste it and it's got that sort of popping quality to it, like it's a little salty and it's just kind of got flavor, like with a capital F, like flavor. And then I always worry. I'm like, oh, what do they do?
Right.
this is going to be bad. I don't know. They obviously did something, their trade secret thing, and I don't know. And usually I will get a headache, and then I go, okay, well, they tried, so never mind, you know. But I do have a friend who's a chef who recently made a holiday meal for my family, and she made everything based on my sensitivities, and her food really popped like that because she knew what she was doing. And I kept saying, are you sure there's nothing else in here? Like, really? This is just like these five things?
Right. You're like, this tastes too good to not hurt me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was eating going, I'm just waiting for, like, I totally thought I was going to have like a two-day fallout from that meal. Everything was amazing, and I was like, this is too good to be true, and it was okay.
I'm fortunate that I don't have food allergies. My kids don't have food allergies, but I certainly have family and friends who do, and so I'm familiar with a lot of the issues. But what I didn't understand until we did this series is just how much that worry is in the back of your mind every single time you eat. I mean, you never get to really experience total food joy. Because every time you take a bite, you always have that thought in the back of your head, is this bite gonna hurt me? And that's hard. That's a hard way to eat, and that's a hard way to live. Please make sure you subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or the podcast app or wherever you get it. Go ahead, you can subscribe or like or favorite or star right now while you're listening. That way you'll never miss an episode. It also helps other people to discover our show. So please do that. Thank you. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani, Shoshana Gold, and me. Editing help from Dan Charles. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Aiden. I'm 10 years old from Tulsa, Oklahoma, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.